Good evening. James McKenney here with my Science Hour, June 16th, 2011. And just a second, I have to do a slight adjustment on the sound on my end. Okay, ready to roll. Tonight's main science topic will be let's just pose the question, how can Earth have severe weather, and we're still seeing this severe weather, very small, high, very intense storms around the United States. How can we still have these when we're having what really is obvious global cooling due to a sun that just is not what it's supposed to be? The sun is very calm, very collected, but we're having severe storms. So what is exactly is going on? In fact, NASA just came out with a study saying that they're predicting that the sun will go into a Middle Ages type of Maunder minimum, where the Earth will have a very severe cooling period. That's what some of their models predict. You might note that there's some imposters running around, sometimes on radio shows, sometimes on web pages, stating that the Earth's, or that the solar activity is booming and it is much more active. But this comes from people who really don't understand the subtlety of this. But the reality is that the sun is very much cooling. So how can basically sun, as the National Weather Service tries to propose, that is based on solar light input and light energy input into this system we call Earth, how can we have these very intense, small, spotty storms that are really all over the globe? And I will give a weather update, a worldwide weather update, to go along with this talk. So the question, the main science topic, will be, how can Earth have intense weather storm systems during a time of intense solar cooling and a time of intense Earth cooling? Okay, so on with the major topics here. Comet LNN once again in the news, being talked about far and wide. The intensity of this has not let up. I've given talks and I've given many radio shows, and I've been interviewed on many radio shows talking about the fact that Comet LNN is a non-issue. It is not an issue physically. But what's becoming apparent is that the alignments, there are alignments that Comet LNN will have with the Earth and other planets. What's becoming apparent is these are being used as planning dates. It looks like New World Order type of astrology mixed with numerology. And let's just take some examples. The way these dates line up between what appear to be natural events that take down entire countries. March 11th was the earthquake, system of earthquakes in Japan that really devastated that country. It took that country down to its knees, very much underreported in the mainstream media. And then the devastating radiation that comes back to out in covering the United States and Europe, already being measured in many locations in Europe. What the question here is, why is this concept of Comet LNN still in the news? Why is this being promoted? Why the big hubbub about Comet LNN? And as I said, it turns out that it very much appears that alignment dates for this comet are being used as planning events. So let me just give an example. 9-1-1, we're all familiar with that. That was the early in the 2000s, the event where two aircraft collided into the Twin Towers in New York. The third building in the Trade Tower system collapsed all on its own. And we all know that there's not many people out there that don't understand that this was not some Arab terrorists with box cutters in their hands. This was a well-orchestrated terrorist event by the powers in the government, and along with associated, what would you call them, control groups. So at any rate, why would such a thing happen? Well, that gives the international banking community much more control. They control the governments. But okay, so that's 9-1-1. We all know about that. Let's look at the Japanese earthquakes. March 11th, 2011, it was exactly 6 months, in terms of the dates of the year, it was exactly 6 months after the 9/11 date. So September 11th, you add 6 months. Six turns out to be a very important number in numerology. It also is an important number with prime numbers, but a very important number in numerology. So also this happened to be one of the alignments with Comet Elenin. You start to see what I'm saying. So these people worship these numbers. They worship astrology. Remember that Reagan consulted an astrologer every day, and so did his wife, Nancy, when she was running the White House, when Reagan was sick in bed and couldn't remember his own name. So you have to start putting these things together, looking at it through the eyes of people who are trying to plan major events. And these are not just little events. These are events that take down entire countries. So if you look into the future and you ask, what is the reason for all the hubbub about Comet Elenin? Well, the hubbub is that's a cover story for planned dates, and they always give information out relative to planned dates and planned upcoming events. They like to leak that out into the public. So at any rate, number one, Comet Elenin physically as a comet is a non-issue. It's not an issue. It's not going to do anything to Earth. Number two, it's becoming very apparent that Comet Elenin, the dates of alignments, of physical alignments with planets or other celestial, you might say, orbital conditions, astrological conditions, not astronomical conditions, those dates would be, appears very much that those are going to be used for planning dates for events. And as I've said before, the United States appears to be very much the next target to bring down an entire country. And they can do it. They have been planning these events for years. Mountain House, I'll just switch topics very quickly here. Right now, I mentioned many weeks ago that I would have access to certain overruns, we just call them overruns, of Mountain House number 10 cans. And so as of today, my ability to get the stock of Mountain House has expanded. Over the past few weeks, I had first 50 cases of the 60-day meat and veggie cases. These are the big number 10 cans, freeze-dried Mountain House. This is the good stuff. And I had access to another 50 cases. This is the way it's going. So on my webpage, keep an eye out, and these Mountain House products will be posted. Just to give you an example of some of the things that are available right now, these are once again the Mountain House number 10 cans. Rice and chicken, spaghetti with meat sauce, chicken a la king, beef stroganoff, chili mac, noodles and chicken, a couple seafood chowder, chicken stew, diced beef cooked, diced chicken cooked, what else? Garden green peas, green beans, corn. And just to give you an example, there might be 19 garden green peas. There are 39 corn available, you know, and so these will probably go pretty quickly. There's some sliced strawberries, blueberry cheesecake, if you like that. What else? So anyway, go to my webpage and keep an eye out, because these lists will change daily. They'll probably sell out pretty quickly, but the products come in, they'll be made available, and when they're sold out, and then we'll go to the next product. Sometimes there'll be a couple products available on a given day. Sometimes there might be 20 products available. And we'll only sell what's on the shelf in the warehouse. So at any rate, just watch for that. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. And due to the nature of this business, we don't take any of these orders by mail order. All of the other products you can order by mail order at JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. I'll give those out again a little later in the show. The nuclear power plant in Nebraska, many talk shows have been covering this topic. It seems that there is very little known about this other than there is a nuclear power plant in Nebraska that has potential for, possible nuclear waste being dumped into the environment. No one really knows what's going on here, but in that kind of a position and with the winds that blow around the United States, if something happened there or if that got into the water table, that could affect many parts of the United States. So at any rate, I just wanted to mention also that the pre-filters are in stock. Those are still available. So they are specifically made for chemical radiation and basically pollutant type things in your water to try and reduce those before it goes into your water filter. Those pre-filters, the universal pre-filters, fit all of the major brand of water filters on the market. Let's see. The U.S. today, I saw this as a headline, I believe it was on USA Today. The United States has 7 days left of money. It is going to go bankrupt or will run out of money in 7 days. These are the kind of things that are happening as they're preparing to wage war in new countries. The country is teetering on the brink of destruction. And with the leadership here, there is no leadership. And, of course, it very much is apparent that the destruction of this country is the goal. So, and also the destruction of the well-being of the people in this country. So, that brings up a topic. People have asked me what they should do to prepare, and I've talked about preparedness many times. But here's something, I've said this before in the show, it's just very simple. You should live on different levels. In other words, you should be living on a basic level, incorporating your survival items in your daily life. If you have here's what the things you should have. You should have a portable gravity feed water filter. And these are things that I sell on my page, and I sell them for a reason. But you should have a water filter. You should have food for at least 6 months for every person in your group or household. You should have a shelter. You should have extra pairs of shoes, something that a lot of people don't think about. You should have blankets and sleeping bags. And then simply the ability to stay where you are, a source of water that you can put in your water filter. And these things should be incorporated into your daily life. The flax, for me, that's an imperative. You should have flax available, one case per person per year. And that is something that you can eat and survive on. Okay, so if you're prepared in that fashion, and by the way, if you live like that and incorporate this into your daily life, you're going to find out you're going to be very healthy. But you don't want to just all of a sudden wait for an emergency and all of a sudden think, well, now I'm going to get all my emergency stuff out of the closet and use it. No, you should be using it every day, and you're going to find you'll be much healthier if you do. So you have to live on a basic level on a daily basis. Also, you have to live on what I call a next level and then a regular society level, three or four levels of living. So on the next level, you might anticipate a partial collapse of society. that where infrastructure is down, maybe the power grid, maybe the water isn't coming in, maybe it'll be for a short period of time, or maybe it'll be for a long period of time. It might last for a week, it might last for 6 months, it might last longer. But maybe some of your services will be available, but be prepared to live at that level, and then live your normal life in society, live a normal life, but be ready at any time, at any moment's notice, to change and go back to that basic level. And if you can do this, you will be a much happier person. You'll be a healthy person, you'll be a happy person. Remember to exercise on a daily basis as much as you can. Find sports, outdoor sports that you like. Remember that physical and mental fitness are very important in survival. You can't just all of a sudden get up from the office chair in overweight and all of a sudden think that you're going to be a survivor. It's not going to work that way. So be healthy, be happy, and be prepared. So, as I said, you will only be happy and relaxed if you know how to live on all the different levels. The basic level, like I say, where complete collapse of society and you are on your own, possibly for years, who knows, we don't know, then be available, have the ability to live on that first level where there's a partial temporary collapse of society, and then live a life in regular society. The problem we have today is there are so many clueless people on the planet today that the people who have a clue are just living with the stupidity that is accepted in our lives. If we had a rational, well-educated society, the leaders of these countries could not get away with what they're doing. Okay, so on to a solar update. First, here's an article I've been trying to include in the radio show for a couple weeks. This announcement came out May 25th, this past May. It says, here, it's a press release. Astronomers unveil most complete three-dimensional map of the local universe. And here's what scientists did. It turns out to be, in my opinion, a complete waste of equipment and good equipment time. They took redshift data, which they say implies the retreat or the moving away of galaxies in the universe around us, in the local universe, so to speak. But it turns out that the redshift is not created by movement. So what they have done is they first have a map of the sky with all of the location of galaxies out in the local, in our local environment in the galaxy. Then they have taken the redshift, and it explains how it is color-coded so that the galaxies would be more distant the more red they are, and the closer they are, a different color. So you can kind of look like at a like a three-dimensional map of land with valleys and mountains, etc. And you can see the various structures of the universe. The only problem is that the redshift is not it is a measure of the receding movement or velocity of an object. But it is not the only cause of redshift, and herein lies the problem. The induced electric dipole redshift is a concept I developed with my very early work in the 1970s because I knew that there had to be a second source of redshift, and it turns out it's an electrical. It's electrical in nature, and it's caused by the electric fields, the local electric non-uniform fields around quasars and galaxies. And that's part of the redshift, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the movement or movement away of galaxies. So all of this work that they have done, the positioning is of these objects is good, but the use of the redshift to indicate how far away an object is simply not true. So a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of equipment time, a lot of very expensive equipment time has gone into a project that, and this is what I've said before about Tier 2 science. You have to understand the subtlety here that Tier 2 science is very important. It's the garbage science that is promoted and handed off to the public, so that would keep you from understanding the real nature of the solar system. What if people in mass understood that that redshift of that galaxy had very little to do with its motion, but had a lot more to do with the electric field around it? Once again, people would say, well, gee, our sun is probably doing that. The sun is a fusion engine, just like the central core of a galaxy. And if there's an electric field surrounding it, then, gee, can't we tap into that electric field and gain free energy? It's not really free. It comes from a source. It's produced by the sun or the galaxy, the nucleus of the galaxy. So it's not free in that sense. It comes from somewhere, but it's free for our use. And therein, again, lies the control aspect of the powers that are running the planet. They know that energy is a huge control mechanism. It's by far the most effective and far-reaching control mechanism for all of society. Everything that we do, every piece of food you eat, everything that happens in your life revolves around energy, the oil industry, or electricity from nuclear power or coal. These are the major industries. They're not just major industries, they're major control points. So telecommunication, food, pharmaceutical, medical, the control of your medical records, all of these areas being completely dominated by control groups, and the poor public is just being hammered these days with these control mechanisms. And there are a lot of people that I know, just there's one guy, unfortunately, Peter, my friend, passed away, but he used to say, just bring on Planet X. I can't wait for it to come so we can get back to normal. That was Peter's statement. So that's, I think, what a lot of people's belief is. That and by the way, let me talk once again about the Comet Elenin issue. The twist on Comet Elenin is that, oh, there are aliens associated with Comet Elenin. And remember that the fourth and final phase, this is what Wernher von Braun told, the story that he told, is that the final stage of world takeover and world dominance by the European bankers, the final stage would be a fake alien invasion. And so with the hype and comment regarding Comet Elenin, switching around to be something like, "Woo! Is it basically a big spaceship instead of a comet?" All of a sudden, you start to see the way this is being treated, Comet Elenin, and it could be ripe for a story that could go out relative to alien invasion of Earth. So, at any rate, if you look and you listen to what institution or organization or agency leaders are saying these days, it looks very much like this is going to be the next ploy, a fake alien invasion, and it's going to scare the pants off of just about everybody, especially the uneducated public out there that think they know everything but don't. They're very easily fooled, and this would be the last straw, so to speak, that would bring down the country into social disorder and chaos, with, of course, the good guys, the white hats of the New World Order, riding in on their white horses to save you. And that's the Leninist philosophy, the Marxist philosophy of the leaders coming in, completely destroying a place, and then bringing up out of its ashes into a utopian society. A quick solar update. NASA has just released three studies showing that solar activity is down, very much down these days. We've had over a couple years where there's really been no sunspots or sunspot activity. And so that's a major story. So basically they are saying that the sun, when they look at this, the standard structure of sunspots, when they look at the standard structure of the way the sun's magnetic field works, and they study these, it would appear that the sun's energy level is dropping. Well, of course, how do you explain this with a model of the sun where fusion is at the core? Are they saying that all of a sudden, in a couple years' time, that the fusion in the solar core is dropping? And you have to understand that if that were true, if the sun had its temperature and heat source, it had as its heat source the core fusion of the sun. These are calculations I made when I was in very rudimentary physics in college. It takes about 1 million years for that light in the form of X-rays to migrate up to the surface of the sun. So you're not going to have some major change all of a sudden, where in a couple of years, all of a sudden we're getting surface changes on the sun. The real answer is that the sun's fusion is at the surface of the sun. And it's a basic fusion engine. There's other issues involved with this, in that the sun is a has the surface, the fusion at the surface, and therefore is very volatile. It can change very quickly, and we can react to it very quickly. This past week, for example, there were no less than two mega flares coming out of the sun, June 7th and then June 10th. And these were immense, immense, powerful, extremely powerful solar flares. And of course, standard science does not have an explanation, because on the one hand, NASA scientists in one group are saying, hey, the sun is quieting down, we don't have sunspots, we're expecting cooler weather on Earth, possibly a period of many years where it's going to be a relatively cool on Earth, or actually quite cool, where the rivers would freeze over from the mid-latitudes and northwards across Europe, across the United States. And remember that the last time that happened, the United States really was not populated the way it is now. It wasn't divided up with the states, etc. So we really don't have a good history of what happened in the United States. Were there a lot of deaths because of this? Were the indigenous people affected, or how did they weather it? So, but the point is that NASA has come out with three studies that show that solar activity is very low. But when you look around the world, I'm going to now give a worldwide weather update, and what you're going to see is that there are massive, very intense storm systems all over the globe, all over the world right now. How on earth are we, how are these two concepts compatible? Because the NASA theory and the standard theory of science today, dealing with the formation of weather, says that weather is formed when warm air warm light comes in from the sun, heats up the surface, it drives the jet streams, it creates tornadoes and hurricanes, and warm water creates hurricanes, etc., and it is expanded or augmented in the summertime when there's more heat in the Atlantic Ocean. When you look at these theories, none of them make any sense at all. For example, with hurricanes, how can warm water from an ocean cause a hurricane? It's absolutely absurd. How can a heat from an ocean that's a temperature of the ocean dropping a fraction of a degree, how can that drive energy into a hurricane and create this massive storm? Shouldn't the energy from the hurricane be dissipating into the ocean in forms of wind and waves? Well, of course, the answer is yes, but modern science is a cauldron of misconceptions, bad science, and just basically obliterating and ignoring the standard laws of science, the conservation of energy, the conservation of momentum. How does all this magically happen from warm seawater? And the answer is that it doesn't. The storm systems we see on Earth are caused by electrical activity that's associated with Earth in our relative environment, our near localized environment in outer space. So now, once again, let me pose the question, and I'm going to go into more detail. How can you justify, so to speak, that Earth is still having tremendous difficult weather when the solar conditions are NASA says are diminishing, and they really are. You can see there's no sunspots, minimal number of sunspots. The sunspot activity is low for this time in our solar cycle. So really the sun's activity appears to be very low. Yet there are immense booming, tremendously big booming flares coming out of the sun. How can this possibly be? If the sun is cooling, how come the solar flaring is bigger and more energy, a lot more energy, not just a little? Some of the biggest flares we've ever seen come out of the sun have come out of the sun in the past few days, as scientists from NASA announced that the sun's energy is diminishing. Well, it turns out that there's a difference between light coming out of the sun, and that's across the visible, the infrared, the ultraviolet, the X-ray spectrum, and all the way up to cosmic rays. Cosmic rays are relativistic protons that come out of the sun, called cosmic rays. They come out at near the speed of light. And we just saw one of the tremendous flares of the past few days showed a very big blast of cosmic rays, relativistic protons, leaving the sun. So the question is, how can you justify these two aspects of the sun? On the one hand, it's diminishing in energy, cooling down, it's measurable, scientists see it. But on the other hand, there's tremendous, some of the biggest solar flares we've ever seen are coming out of the sun. Well, the answer is that there's a division of labor, so to speak, with the sun. The sun has visible light coming out, and that's rather constant and might vary a little bit from day to day. But let's say that's rather constant, and then that energy coming out of the sun is diminishing. What scientists fail to realize today is that the electrical component of the sun, the electrical energy coming out of the sun, is increasing. So it's a different form of energy. The sun is putting out energy in a different form. And who knows, maybe that's why the solar radiation output is diminishing, because much of that energy is coming out in the form of electricity, of electrically charged particles moving out at high velocity from the sun. So the end result is that the theory that solar light, visible light, infrared, ultraviolet, that light somehow creates storms on Earth, that's false. And so there you can see where the contradiction lies. There's no contradiction in the data. The sun's surface visible light and the light spectrum is showing that it's cooling down, but the surface energy in form of electricity is very much increasing. And that can very much affect us. The one thing you'll note is the winds. I don't know where you've been, but every place I have been, I've done some minor traveling lately, every place I've been, the winds have been horrific. Just very strong winds, constantly very strong. Right now, let me review this. Why don't I go through the World Weather Report right now, and I'll show you how these concentrated areas are receiving a tremendous amount of electrical energy, which is driving the storm systems on Earth. So that's very important. But at the same time, the day the weather is cooler, how can you have the tremendous tornado activity that we've had when there's so much rain and cool weather? it doesn't make any sense according if you look at the standard explanation of science. So on with the worldwide weather report. Let's start on the western tip of Africa. It's just a little bit north of the equator. And the storm system's moving across Central Africa. This is the season for those to happen, but they're very powerful, and they can break up and form on almost a snap of a finger on a minute's notice. The storms over Africa, tremendous thunderstorms, and as I said, you can see them break apart and reform just in sometimes a matter of minutes. These storms are still swooping south of their normal path, which would be a little west and north. These storms are swooping south into northern Venezuela, into Colombia, into Panama, into Central America, and actually so powerful that they pass over those points of land and continued on to the west into the Pacific. The Pacific Ocean is a cauldron of energy. Right now, the majority of Pacific energy is going up to Alaska. And there's a tremendous hurricane right now over central Alberta in Canada. It's the second most westerly state of Canada. There's a hurricane, and it's spinning, of course, in a counterclockwise direction, and the bottom arms of that hurricane are sweeping across the United States, driving tremendous weather systems across the United States right now. Those weather systems are in the form of microstorms. You might be with a sunny day, and all of a sudden, within minutes, these clouds will move in, very intense, a lot of rain, sometimes hail associated with them, and then they're over within a few minutes, and they are moving very quickly through the United States. Well, these are not normal storms, and this is not what you would expect during a time of global cooling. High-energy storm systems are associated with more energy in the air and atmosphere, not less. So there again, you have to understand that the scientific theories that are being promoted in standard science are simply wrong. They don't make any sense at all. They don't account for the data. Very simple data, like I was just talking about. They don't account for any of this. But if you look at the fact that this electrical signature of the sun is ramping up, and that may be a cycle of its own, where the electrical part of the sun is ramping up energy, but the visible part of the spectrum of the sun is diminishing. And these may be very complex processes, but who knows all of the various processes that may be involved. The sun is an extremely complex furnace, let's put it that way. And I pointed out before that due to very simple calculation, you can show that the sun could not possibly have fusion at its core, because that would be a fixed amount of fusion material, and it's very easy to show that the amount of energy leaving the sun, if you convert mass to energy, E equals mc squared, and you measure the amount of solar energy leaving the sun at any given point, multiply that by the millions of years that the Earth has been here, it shows that the sun did not have sufficient energy in that central core to provide energy to the Earth and the solar system for all this time. So something else is definitely going on. It's a very simple calculation. Anybody can do it. And so what's wrong with standard science? Why can't they get this right? If there's such a blatantly obvious condition on the sun, wouldn't that raise some red flags with the astronomical, the space science, and the astronomy community, astrophysics? People in astrophysics should be very concerned about such an issue. That the core model of the sun, there's simply not enough energy in the core to last very long. at the rate it's burning, and certainly not for 4.5 billion years. And you also have to take into account the mass reduction of the sun due to the solar wind. So what's going on? What's driving this heat engine that we call the sun? Well, it's surface energy. The fusion is at the surface of the sun. Once you start realizing that, all of this makes a lot of sense. So once again, let me just review the worldwide weather. The United States proper, serious, small but very serious storm systems are sweeping through the United States right now. It's the southern leg of an arm that initiates in Alberta, Canada. The Pacific Ocean is typically where our weather originates. And right now, the Pacific storm systems are moving north to Alaska, helping to drive that weather system that's in Alberta. So that's the United States. Tremendously powerful storms through Georgia, moving down into northern Florida. And Florida is always, especially this time of year, a cauldron of electrical activity. The Caribbean, a very interesting place. As I said, the storms move off the western coast of Africa, move westerly along the, a little bit north of the equator, driving tremendous rains still into Venezuela, Colombia, Panama, the northern states or countries of South America. Then, as this has been going on for quite some time, those storms will swing north and then east and run over Cuba, the Dominican Republic, Haiti, Puerto Rico, and the eastern Antilles Islands, so that the trade winds in those areas are no longer from the east. The typical trade winds in that area coming from the east, but right now all of the winds in that area and the storm systems are coming from the west. The Pacific Ocean right now is in the near the South China Sea and east of Malaysia, east of China, even east of Taiwan. All of these areas have extremely, extremely intense weather systems moving through and just constantly barraged. That whole area is just constantly barraged with major storm systems. So once again, the intense little pockets of storm systems that are moving through the United States, it's not just here, it's over the entire globe. The entire globe of Earth is being pummeled with electrical activity. And that when the solar flares kick up, we can see the effects very shortly in Earth weather. They do have an effect. So it's not some kind of a magical wave your hands and all of a sudden the sun is more active. You have to differentiate between the two parts of the sun. The one aspect is the light, the visible light, the infrared light, ultraviolet light, and X-rays that come out of the sun. And remember that most of that energy is absorbed high in Earth's atmosphere, the ultraviolet, the infrared, and the X-rays. And that's why the equipment to detect those particular items, the equipment to detect any kind of object in outer space that would give infrared light, that would give ultraviolet light or X-rays, that is needs to be measured typically with satellites or with equipment that's very high on mountaintops, to eliminate the absorption of our atmosphere for those particular wavelengths of light, the X-rays, ultraviolet, and the infrared. The remaining part of the light, the visible light, comes through and hits the ground. And, of course, it warms up the local environment, but it's not enough, it's never enough to cause the major storms that we see on a daily, or almost on a daily basis now. Let's see, I'm looking through my notes here. That's pretty much it in terms of world weather. The Hawaiian Islands also very late rainy season this year, and after going through a couple years of drought in that area. Southeast Asia, with just being pounded by these major tropical storm systems that are moving through. And they can form cyclones, typhoons very quickly, but since the Japanese typhoon of a couple weeks ago, we really haven't seen any typhoon activity in the Pacific, just severe thunderstorm and windstorm activity. So at any rate, the issue is, I'll, for those who are somewhat new to the show, I'll go over how the solar wind creates weather on Earth. Let's take a flare of positive charge and negative charge that's coming off the sun. As it moves out towards Earth, and it encounters our magnetic field, which is a geomagnetic field. It's like a bar magnet, so to speak, inside of Earth. And that creates a magnetic field shield out to about 35,000 miles out to the sunward side of Earth. And then there's kind of a fan-shaped protection area around Earth. And that's very important because it protects us people from cosmic radiation and the other types of X-rays, ultraviolet, that can be very damaging. Most of that is filtered out high in the atmosphere. Now, the situation with electricity is when the protons and the electrons, they're oppositely charged particles, when they come up to the magnetic field of Earth, they split. The protons go one way and the electrons go another way. And that, as the split, guess what? It forms a battery. It's one of the local batteries that we see around Earth. My weather book describes many of the localized batteries, electrical batteries, that result from the passing solar wind. So how does this get down and get to the Earth's surface and cause Earth weather? Well, first of all, you have an even layer or somewhat even layer of charge at the upper atmosphere in the ionosphere of Earth, and that basically is a source of charge. It's when you call something a source, that means it's like a storage bank of charge. It's negative around the equator, moving in a westerly direction. It's positive around the upper atmosphere, around the temperate climates, the north and south, causing the jet stream. So the jet streams are really linked to the jet streams are linked directly to the electric and magnetic activity around Earth, which is driven by the solar electric fields and the electric currents coming out of the sun. So how does that energy then get down to the surface of the Earth to cause storms? Well, the situation, when the clouds form, and by the way, you would not even have clouds if it weren't for the vertical electric field of Earth, you would have the clouds form, and then they're somewhat like fingers sticking up into the air. And so the electrical discharge starts slowly to discharge down through the storm. So the higher the storm system, the higher the cloud, the more electricity comes down through that storm system, and we experience it on Earth as lightning when that electrical energy finally comes all the way down and hits the Earth. Well, take a tornado. One of the more common things to see around a tornado is electrical activity, lightning coming right down the shaft of the tornado, that central open vacuum column of the tornado. At night, they're lit up like a light bulb. Well, what's doing that? Well, it's the electricity that's flowing down the central tube of that tornado that gives it its energy. How can you have tornadoes at night? There's no daylight energy coming in, and the atmosphere is cooling in those locations. So how can you have a tornado at night? That's a very good question. How can you have a hurricane during the night if there is solar input on a daily basis that is needed to keep that thing going? So it just, of course, none of it makes sense. The reason you can have tornadoes at night is because they're not charged, they're not fueled by light energy, they are fueled by electrical energy. And this electrical energy initiates on the sun. Just another quick mention, when comets or planetary alignments occur, depending on the severity of the alignment or the type of alignment, how many items are aligned, is it close, then those alignments can add to our normal electrical circuit activity in the region of Earth, causing intense storms, causing electrical activity that would affect our weather. And without this type of electrical weather, we would have just very bland weather, almost nothing in terms of weather. So electrical activity is very important. It's a very key component of the solar equation, and it is completely ignored. It's completely ignored in standard science. So one of my books, I think it's the Atlantis to Tesla book, I have a short article that came from a previous web page. But it says, how can you predict the weather if you don't understand what causes the weather? And it's very true. How can you possibly predict hurricanes or tornadoes or the movement of hurricanes? How can you possibly predict those if you don't know what causes them? And you have some model that has factors in it that have nothing to do with anything, such as La Nina or El Nino. Those are factors that have little, if anything, to do with hurricane formation, yet they're quoted all the time. But once again, that's part of the garbage science that's pawned off to the public. So, once again, the main science topic that I wanted to talk about tonight, how can Earth experience intense weather, microstorms, very powerful localized storms, wind, tornadoes, hurricanes, in the very heavy tornado activity that we've had, when the solar conditions are diminishing? And when I talk about solar conditions, I'm talking about the visible light and the light that only the visible part of that light actually reaches the surface of the Earth, because as I said before, the X-rays, the ultraviolet, and the infrared light are primarily blocked, mostly blocked in the atmosphere before they ever get to the surface. So it does not leave a whole lot of energy left in the visible light to warm this planet, to create hurricanes, to create tornadoes. There's just not enough energy in those systems. So you have to look elsewhere, and that's where the electrical component of the sun comes in. It shows that the sun is putting out an extremely powerful electrical component. So that's why it's important too. It's really unfortunate that certain radio shows are posting people who come out initially calling themselves researchers. Before long, they're calling themselves experts and self-adorned experts, where they really don't know what they're talking about. They might do well as news reporters, but they would not, you know, they're not scientists. They don't have any clue of what they're talking about. They just listen to some buzzwords and some buzz phrases and then pass that off as trying to be knowledgeable. Okay, let's see. I'm going to go back and talk just a little bit about preparedness and the, once again, let me give out the mail order address. And once again, for mail order, the books, the pre-filters, the water filters, those are all fair game for mail order. But due to the nature of the food, that does not include flax. You can order the flax by mail order too, because that's generally available. The Mountain House freeze-dried food will be available on a daily basis. The web page is going to change on a daily basis with the offerings of the various kinds of food that will be posted there. And I read off some of the types of food. There will be a pretty good variety. So if you want chopped meat, or if you want vegetables, or if you want packaged in terms of 60-day units of, say, meat and vegetables. Those products will be available on the web page. And so, but you have to go back on a daily basis because if we have, say, 20, 30 cases of something, they'll be sold out, and tomorrow they won't be there. So they'll only be there for a short amount of time. So the once again, the web page, JM as in Mary, CC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. Seven letters, JMCCSCI.com. And the web page, the mail ordering address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. And just to give some pricing here for the pre-filter that fits any of the water filters that are out there on the market today, including the Dalton, which of course I sell on my page. The pre-filters run $199 plus $20 shipping. And initially I had that offered if you were one of the lucky ones that ordered before the shipping changed. We just couldn't anymore absorb the cost of shipping. But we're keeping it to a minimal set cost. So you don't have to worry about that. Also, the pre-filter we don't ship to foreign countries anymore. It just is too heavy, and that's the only item that we don't ship to foreign countries. Let's see, the Dalton water filters, as always, those are in stock. The book sets and the Calculate Primes book will be coming out of printing here shortly. If people are waiting for those books, some of them, those are in back order. But other than that, we have a fairly good supply of all of the items. Part of being prepared is being knowledgeable, having a good understanding. That's where the books and DVDs come in handy. Being prepared, you need water, you need food, you need to be able to stay where you are, you need a shelter, a roof over your head. And as I said before, if you're prepared, you are going to be prepared in many ways. So you should be living on a daily basis with your survival equipment. Looks like I'm running out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.